today is Repair for Future, given by Repair Fox.
Right.
Known to German viewers as Repair Fox. Andreas has been leading this, I guess, repair cafes movement for 16 years? Something like that? That's a lot. That's a lot of repairing. Oh, look, oh, people. Excellent. Come in. Take a seat. There you go. See, you know, like, everyone make friends. Where did I get to? Yes, Andreas has been leading the repair movement for a long time and was a familiar face on German television as Repair Fox in the ARD buffet. I have no idea. I'm not going to read out the rest of this because I'm pretty sure that you're just going to, like, tell him. Take a big hand, please, for Andreas.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking the time of your lunch hour to show up here to hear about Repair for Future or the right to repair at What Hackers Yearn. So my clicker doesn't click. Why not? Okay, I'll use my... Oh, I'm in the wrong window, I suppose. Give me a second. So, I did practice this at the speaker desk, where it worked flawlessly. So, here we go. Okay, so. This is me. I'm Andreas in Chaos. I'm Fraxinas. That's my hacker and my GitHub name. And then when I do repair stuff, then I go by RepairFox. I'm an electrical engineer. And in my day job, I'm a software developer. And I'm glad that I have like a little balance where I can use my hands and still do electronics when I repair things in my free time. I'm not professionally doing this. It's all just volunteering. I'm a member and former president of Makerspace in Germany and also founder of the local repair cafe in the city of Aschaffenburg. I am not the leader of any repair movement. That was founded a few years before us. I will say a little bit about that in a bit. And I've been doing repair tips on public television in Germany for 8 years. Repaired various things from inflatable pool toys to dripping water faucets, computers, phones, whatnot. In short life sections in a daily show, pretty much. Then I founded another repair cafe in the rural area where I live. And I did already do a talk about right to repair at the last Dutch hacker event as well. So you gotta be kidding me. Is this the future we signed up for? We have random IoT devices just breaking because somebody decides that the backend is not profitable anymore. Let's turn it off. Firmware updates, bricks, HP printers. Apple does part pairing, which means you can't use salvaged or used spare parts in your phones for repairs. Canon USA printers won't scan anymore when they're out of ink. Apple, Samsung are deliberately slowing down old phones. Latest Bosch dishwashers can't use all of their programs when they're not connected to the cloud. Yeah. Sonos was trying to coerce people into throwing away legacy speakers instead of providing security updates for network speakers. So they gave people a discount when they bricked them with a firmware update called recycle mode. Then very traditional industry tractors, John Deere, they lose a battle in right to repair war because they are trying to protect everything in their tractors with DRM and prevent independent repairs. So no, this is not the future we sign up for. It's a little smaller than I expected. Yeah. Of course, this radicalizes people. We start a movement. 16 years ago, just a few minutes south of here in Amsterdam, a journalist called Martine Postma founded the first institutionalized repair cafe, which means she brought together people who know how to repair things and have fun doing it with people who have broken stuff but don't know how to do it themselves. Who does not know how an event, a repair cafe event works? You don't? Okay. Then I will invest a minute to show you how it works. I will just go back to this one slide here. And why does this not work? Okay. And open the last talk. Maybe. Nope, it doesn't load. So I will describe it then. Imagine you have some kind of public space or like a youth center, whatnot. And you have a bunch of tables. People are sitting there with their tools. Usually they bring them from home. And you have a reception. People walk up to the reception with their broken toaster. They say, the toaster doesn't work. Receptionist asks, in which way does it not work? Does it not get warm? Does it not stay down? Things like that. So you need to try to find out a little bit about what the actual problem is. Doesn't work is not a good error description. You all know that. And then how we do it is we write it all down. You have to sign a little liability waiver. Like if it breaks for good, then it was bad luck, pretty much. They all go on a board. And then the repair people pick what they think they can fix. For example, not everybody is able to fix electric devices. Some people do sewing instead, or fix toys, wooden toys, and stuff like that. So they select something from the board, pick the person that brought that, and they go together to the table and then start working on it. So ideally, we just help the person fix it themselves. In practice, usually it's like old ladies and stuff that have never held a screwdriver in their life, and we do it for them. And then everybody is happy in the end. So let's go back to this. Whoop. Woo. Yeah, okay, of course, we cannot repair the world with voluntary repair cafe events that are held more or less frequently. But what we're doing is we're sparking a movement. We're raising consumer awareness that the way that currently things are manufactured, the quality of things, the lack of repairability is a problem, and have thus sparked a legislation that is coming forward. So since 2021, there have been some big changes. The last European Union eco-design regulations have introduced mandatory repairability mandates for a few categories of big household appliances, mainly washing machines, fridges, and displays, televisions. And these are in effect. That means spare parts need to be supplied, depending on the category, for in between 7 to 10 years, and also repair manuals and diagnostic tools need to be provided by the manufacturer for professional repairers. There's been a discussion, is a repair cafe actually a professional repairer or not? So that's a little problem there. But at least it has taken some. It has taken some good turns here. Disassembly is also required to be possible without using destructive tools. We're seeing a lot of appliances that have these mean clips, and they're basically for easy assembly and never to be taken apart again anymore afterwards. This is still a big problem because, like I said, it only applies to these few categories of devices. Also in 2021, France introduced a repairability index label. Is anyone from France in the audience? Have you seen these things? They're like stickers that look a little bit like the energy efficiency labels. Okay, so then this year came into effect just recently, over a month ago, on June 20th, the regulations 1669 and 1674 smartphones and tablets, and also cordless phones. And you may have read about that. This is introducing a repairability label EU-wide for phones. I can show an example. Like, this is for a Fairphone, for example. It has the energy rating, which is, well, yeah, it's always very prominently displayed, but the more important things, I think, are in the bottom. And this is the repairability rating and the durability rating and the amount of cycles that the battery can be recharged before falling under a certain threshold, and the waterproof rating. Yes, so this has to be on every phone and tablet sold effective now. Yeah. Usually you find it in the online shop somewhere under data sheets, whatever. So it's got to be there. Let's close this. And it also requires, which is part of the rating from A to E that the phone gets, the availability of spare parts, for example, screens and operating system updates. And the better and the longer these periods are for updates, the shorter for spare parts delivery, the higher the rating is and gets. And another point is, can you open the device with standard tools? Do you need to heat it up to open it, or can you unscrew it with a standard screwdriver? So then there's a there's a EU directive 2024-1799, and this has been voted for in the EU Parliament in July, last year, but it hasn't come into effect yet. Because unlike a EU regulation, a directive has to be implemented into law by each member state. No member state has fully implemented this directive yet, and this is like the big right to repair thing that we've been hoping for in the last years, because it covers a lot more categories. But right now it's still on paper. The planned provisions of this directive are that manufacturers are going to have to offer repairs when feasible, and each repair attempt or each successful repair is automatically extending the warranty period by a year. And also, the manufacturer can't refuse to repair a device that has priorly been opened, for example, by third party, which means by yourself, too. So if you try to repair something and you fail, then the manufacturer can't say, well, this has been tampered with, I'm not touching it anymore. There is going to be a standardized repair information form, which I don't personally know much about yet, and a EU-wide platform to find repair services. Because right now, one of the really big problems that we actually have is that professional repair services are going under, out of business. It's hard to find places that will independently repair your little home appliances, for example. They will just tell you, throw away, get a new one. It's not worth it. Because they are so difficult to fix and they're so cheaply made and built that it is, it's not worth for people to deal with it. And so it's going to be helpful to have a platform to actually find professionals that can repair your appliances and consumer electronics. What we deal with at repair cafes, at the voluntary events, are usually things that aren't considered worth repairing professionally. Yeah. Because we do it for free in our free time, so is not taking into account the how economic something is. Spare parts and the necessary tools for repairs are going to have to be reasonably priced as well. Once this is implemented, that will fundamentally change the repair landscape, but only if it's actually implemented properly by the member states. So, the covered product categories are still limited, but it's a lot more than before. It's again smartphones and tablets. So this is going to extend the current situation from the EU regulation. And it'll also cover household appliances, again extending the existing regulation, and displays that already are also regulated. And it'll also cover vacuum cleaners, battery-powered light vehicles, which are basically electric scooters, and e-bikes. This is really helpful. And for some odd reason, welding equipment and servers. But only servers, not home computers. There are two abbreviations that I quickly want to say something about. One is the ESPR, the Eco Design for Sustainable Products, and this regulation is actually, so that iteration of the regulation entered into force in 2024, And it requires that products must be designed for durability, repairability, reusability, and recyclability. It bans destructive disassembly practices. Like I said, the clips that break off when you try opening it are already forbidden. And it enables standardized spare part access and diagnostics. This is already in effect for electronics, furniture, and textiles. Worth mentioning is that the eco-design regulations have brought us, for example, the LED light sources and the ban of the old incandescent lights, or the wattage limit of vacuum cleaners. So these eco-design standards are very broad and aren't only for repairability, but also for other important regulations in regards of the environmental friendliness of products. So what's also supposed to be introduced is the Digital Product Passport, DPP. And so every regulated product is going to have a unique QR code or an NFC tag that the consumers can scan. And it'll be linked to its repair history and the manuals, the service manuals, and which materials it is made out of, which is important to know how to recycle the products. Yeah. It says battery-powered light vehicles, so the scooters and e-bikes and textiles are included early, and it's supposed to start next year, mid-2026. So, you may have heard that this nice new directive coming into effect this year has been set back last minute by the industry, because they managed to weaken it in an essential regard of it by making screen repairs not necessarily be possible by the consumer themselves. So only by professionals. They managed to weaken that in a crucial spot, which is really sad, because it was short notice that it wasn't possible to counteract, pretty much. Yeah. Also, there are loopholes which may allow the manufacturer to still do part pairing, like Apple currently does with their spare parts, by claiming some weird security issues or IP protection grounds. It's going to depend a lot on how this regulation is going to be implemented into the national laws, and also probably going to be a few court cases deciding on these issues. So NGOs, there are NGOs that care for repairability, like the repair.org, pretty much, for example, or in Germany, the Runder Tisch Reparatur, so the round table for repairability. And they are warning that this may lead to a compliance theater where the manufacturers try to get around everything by doing the bare minimum that they're required to. This is a table that I think I have a little bigger somewhere as well. Let's see. Nope. Yeah, here. So This is a table from EU.org, and pretty much everything that is green has already been in force pre 2025, and then the light green things is that just came into effect this July. For example, the spare parts availability and repairable by design for newly marketed products in the large household appliances sections. The tumble dryers have been added to this year, or as well as the smartphones and the tablets. Then a bunch of things come into effect next year, mid next year, like the reasonable prices for spare parts and required mandatory repairs offered by the manufacturer and the right to use compatible spare parts and abolishment of software locks. This is going to come into effect in, end of July 2026 for certain product categories, which there are a lot of. However, there are many categories of products that aren't specifically mentioned and fall under other, and of course other is not covered. Other is pretty much every consumer electrics and household supplies, your mixer, your blender, your toaster, pretty much everything that's not a big appliance. And it's all the consumer electronics, your headphones, all of these things are not covered in the legislation yet. It's just certain categories that are really improving. Here's the welder. Of course, everybody needs that. Yeah, but also like garden tools. Yeah, this is really sad. The French repairability already covered lawnmowers, but the EU legislation doesn't. Toys aren't covered either. Yeah. So this is a little setback and something that we still need to work on. Yeah, that's pretty much this slide again. Vast majority of repairs and products isn't covered at all. So if we look at what we repair at one of our voluntary repair events at a repair cafe, then only 4% of that of the stuff that we do there would be covered by the legislation, even the next iteration of the legislation, because things people bring there are old, are little devices that are out of these categories. Yeah, so it's a start, but it's not gonna be perfect yet. What can you do? What can we do? Repair for yourself. If you've got something that's broken, check out YouTube for repair videos. There are repair manuals on iFixit, good ones. Probably for special interests like tube radios, there's forums and chat groups that you can exchange knowledge. And if you need assistance because you're not handy yourself, then come visit a repair cafe. Help others repair their stuff. Think globally, act locally. Volunteer as a repair helper if you know how to do that. Repaircafe.org has a list of the next repair cafe in your area and on your calendar. Usually you can just drop by with your toolbox and start helping. You don't need to sign up or anything like that. Usually we're covered with an insurance so that you don't have any liability if you break something. If there's no repair cafe anywhere close, then why not start one on your own? And a lot of Baker Spaces offer, or Hacker Spaces offer, repair hours at their rooms. So there's a lot of synergy going on. I've spoken about that before as well. Yeah. So also for climate change, studies find that we can save a lot of carbon dioxide by repairing mainly because these things don't have to go on the trash and don't have to be produced, new ones. So this is also a puzzle piece in mitigating climate change. What else can you personally do? Think twice before buying. Avoid problematic products, the China dropshipping stuff. Sometimes it's fun, but it's fun for a very brief period of time, and then you're annoyed that it breaks so quickly. If you can't fix it, you don't own it. This is a very important claim. Always keep that in mind. If you buy something in a closed, locked down ecosystem, what are you going to do when the manufacturer turns off the cloud backend? You're going to be stuck with a brick of useless electronics. Cherish service and maintenance. It's important to change your filters and loop your stuff so that it just doesn't break as fast. Sometimes it's clever to actually look in a manual. keep using legacy hardware or strip and exploit for parts. Help your friends or family buy refurbished professional hardware, laptops, for example, instead of buying cheap consumer new ones that are worse for higher price and less durability. Use and help develop. We are developers, we are engineers. Help develop efficient, sustainable technologies of the future. Drive an electric car if you can. Give away used stuff instead of throwing it away. Do kids soldering classes. Hardware soldering is a cultural technique. Repairing is a cultural technique. It needs to be taught to people. Yeah. It's something that's gradually getting lost, and we need to bring this back. Yeah, society. What does society need to do? Close the loopholes in the laws. Extend them to all products, not just to certain categories. And what I personally think would be really good would be a mandatory declaration of the projected lifetime. How long is this device engineered to last? And write that on the device and also make the warranty this exact length. Then somebody can decide, do I want to buy the cheap washing machine for 300 that breaks after 2 years, or do I invest the 900 and get one that will last 15 years? And it's guaranteed to last 15 years. So the math is easy, easier that way, if they really know. What would be cool is a Europe-wide return system for a functional and or repairable goods. Electronic waste is the fastest growing class of waste, and there are so many things in there that are still working, and people just don't like their color anymore or whatnot. So this should really be going back out into the market pretty much. But people don't want to deal with Marktplatz or Kleinanzeigen. But it should be required that things that are still good don't land on the trash. Some initiatives do this already for computers. And then give them to poor people or to refugees. Some countries and some states or cities, in Germany, for example, have already introduced some incentives for repairs. For example, my district gives us 50 euro for every repair event, which is not much, but it's something. Sweden has tax exemptions for all repairs. Vienna was... all of Austria was subsidizing repairs with 50%. So 50% of the cost of a repair would be covered by the state. This helps a lot. And what should be really done is that the ecological impact and the social damage due to the production of new products and their disposal has to be accounted for. So we should price in this cost, which we don't right now. So all the cheap electronics that we buy is basically on the backs of the poor people in the third world and the producing countries. Yeah, clothing, of course. That includes everything, all products. Yeah, not just electronics. Yeah. What we need to do is we need to shift into a circular or a degrowth society before society changes against our will. So we need to be prepared for it and do this in a controlled fashion. The way it works right now is there is basically no wealth creation in the whole electronics and textile sections anymore, sectors anymore. It's being designed in Far East, produced Far East, then maybe even drop shipped here. So nobody earns anything here except we have a giant pile of trash. So if we went back to products that are better and easily repaired, we could have an entire industry here in Europe where people earn their living wage with repairing products that will last longer, where it's currently not possible because the quality is just so bad and things are deliberately made that they're not repairable. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. I'm open for questions. The next talk here doesn't start until in another 20 minutes or so.
Thank you. Thank you very much for. We've really fucked it, haven't we? We're not doing it. This isn't going well. Do we have any questions from the internet? Do we have a signal angel? No? No questions from the internet? Sorry. Okay. So, questions in the room. All right.
Disclaimer, don't ask me any legal questions, please. I didn't read these super long laws.
Thanks for the talk. Do you have any specific ideas how to teach kids how to repair things?
How to repair things.
Kids.
So we have, with our repair cafe or makerspace, have gone into schools and just with a bunch of stuff, with old computers, and had them take them apart, look at the parts, explain what does. What was a big problem, though, was we had the teachers send letters to the parents of the kids asking them to bring to the class devices that are broken or things that are broken. And there basically wasn't anything that they could bring because their parents just throw everything out right away. They don't keep anything or they don't even try to repair it because that generation does not know that things can be repaired. They are trained to buy new. So it was really interesting for the kids just to open a computer case to see there's a circuit board in there and there's this is the RAM and the CPU and I've never seen that before, and we had actually broken stuff of the school and of the teachers that we could fix together, like we do some soldering and change the fuse. That is one thing. Then what Mitch does and Carsten in the hardware hacking area, just solder little sets that are blinking with the kids. Of course, the kids of us hackers are never going to have problems with it, but we really need to go out in the schools and bring that awareness to people. There are... So I know that there are like manuals and easy things that you can easily reproduce with kids that you can download, for example, from Binary Kitchen. That's a makerspace in Germany. And they have LaTeX manuals, PDFs that you can download, like to build little Wäscheklammer, like clothespins with LEDs and yeah, things like that.
Great talk, thank you. I missed the beginning, unfortunately, so if I missed this, correct me. You're talking about electronics. Does that include open source software so we can also keep upgrading things after, say, it's no longer effective for us to maintain the software?
Mm-hmm.
You go and die.
Yeah.
Is there a solution for that? Do you know about that?
Unfortunately not. That is not in law. What we have, though, is... at least a longer guaranteed time span for providing software and security updates for phones and tablets, for example. That is in the new directive. If you ask me, then it should be mandatory that every discontinued product is opening the API and so that you can just run your own backend server and you don't have to trash the stuff. Like the worst example is if you just dropped in, you didn't hear that Sonos had this recycle mode for their legacy products where they didn't want to provide security updates anymore, and you would basically brick your device and then get a discount on buying a new one. Yeah.
it's pretty bad. Actually, that's appalling. I mean, the other open question is, how does this work with like various cloud-enabled devices, right? So when the back end stops working and mm-hmm. the rest of it, they just go dead. And we're looking at a world now where increasingly people are talking about implantable devices, you know, that are reliant on cloud services for, yep. you know, so it's like, oh, my eye stopped working.
Yes, this is something that has in fact happened in Australia. People had implants and the company went out of business and they stopped working, like retinal implants. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a Black Mirror episode. It is sadly the truth. We are hacking and opening devices, enabling them to flash Tasmota on the cheap Chinese Internet of Things controllers and stuff like that. So keep doing that. This is an important thing. We're enabling like consumers to do it really easily themselves at home without having to do complicated soldering or anything. That is a very good step.
Okay, we have time for a couple more questions, if there's no others. Sorry. Mike, because so that the recording picks it up.
Hi, really nice talk.
Thank you.
I also know some other organizations that are trying to do the same, so my question goes, what do you think we need to do to work together globally to make in different places the same pushing the same ideas, right? Because we mm-hmm. all think the same and it will be the good for everyone.
Yeah, so for the repair initiatives, there are like umbrella organizations that are already linking together the local independent repair cafes, for example. In Germany, we have the Anstiftung, which lists over 1,000 repair cafes or initiatives in the German-speaking countries. There is restart.org that is mainly active in Britain and Spain, I think, and there are also other national and EU-wide umbrella sites that are focusing on... Okay, my cat needs her insulin. And of course, there's going to be this this portal, this EU portal. I don't know how good or well they will implement that, but that might also help. Yeah, but you're right. We can only be a drop in the ocean if we only act locally. It's got to be a movement. Yeah, but us hackers and the repairers, which are usually like retired TV technicians and stuff like that, we have a lot of those people that are scared of hackers. we need to bring these together, and that's why I'm always propagating the synergy effects.
Well, thank you for your talk again for me. You mentioned servers in your presentation.
There's yeah.
For repairability. Do you know what the distinction is between a desktop and a server?
I do not. No, I do not.
Yeah. Probably in the law somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, someone's going to have to troll through that couple of thousand pages of legislation.
Yeah.
If you've ever tried to read EU law, if you ever need a way to go to sleep or to wish that you went to sleep permanently, try reading the legislation.
Yeah.
Holy shit, is it dense.
It is public, though. You can read it up. There's like a 100-page document for every category.
are there any more questions? Any more questions? Go. Oh. A repeat customer.
So in your experience in repair cafes, what are some of the easy stuff to repair and some of the most difficult stuff to repair?
Some of the most easy stuff to repair is broken cables. You just swap the cable, takes 5 minutes, and you save an expensive coffee maker that costs €1,000, for example. Hard repairs are always like old tube devices, 80s amplifiers. You usually don't have enough time to fix these things because it requires so much diagnostics. And we have, like for tubes, we have somebody who takes them home if it's a really nice thing, and then people pay him to fix it. Things that are impossible to repair, I can say. All printers. We have, printers are the worst thing. We have a success rate of less than 5% in printer repairs. Because these things are not meant to be ever taken apart or serviced at all. Yeah. Printers are worst.
Even really expensive ones.
Really expensive ones don't come into the repair cafe. When they're old, like old HP laser jets, that's fine, or Brother printers, these last forever. But all the inkjets, you can forget about it. Or even worse, the multi-function ones, the ones that also scan. No chance. Yeah.
Right, there you go. You've been told. No more MFDs for you. Right, we'll have one more question, and then I think we need to probably call it.
I can say,
we have to get this for the poor people on the stream.
Does your repair cafe refuses to work with something because of it's too old and it's not reasonable even to start repairing?
Yes, sometimes if people bring multiple things and there is a lot going on, then we refuse or we only do one of their things so that other people have a chance. And we refuse to repair pad coffee machines or the capsule coffee machines because these are just a nuisance to the environment. We don't repair combustion engines. We don't repair microwaves because these are just super dangerous, at least if it's the microwave transformer part. And sometimes if there's too much going on, then we don't even try printers. Sometimes we take them apart to show people that it can't be fixed if there's not much going on. Yeah, but other than that, just because something is too old, no. Just because it's too cheap or not worth it, no. We always do it. We at least try. And then people are, even if it's going wrong, if it's not fixable, people are happy because at least they tried. And then they can throw it away with good conscience.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Andreas. Round of applause, please, Andreas.